In continuity, it is impossible to distinguish phenomena at their merging points, so we look for them at their extremes. Impossible to distinguish between animal and vegetable in some infusoria but hippopotamus and violet. For all practical purposes they're distinguishable enough. No one but a Barnum or a Bailey would send one a bunch of hippopotami as a token of regard. So away from the great manufacturing centers. Black rain in Switzerland, January 20, 1911. Switzerland is so remote, and so ill at ease is the conventional explanation near, that Nature, 85 to 451, says of this rain that in certain conditions of weather, snow may take on an appearance of blackness that is quite deceptive. Maybe so. Or at night, if dark enough, snow may look black. This is simply denying that a black rain fell in Switzerland, January 20, 1911. Extreme remoteness from great manufacturing centers. Law Nature, 1888, 2-406. That August 14, 1888, there fell at the Cape of Good Hope, a rain so black as to be described as a shower of ink. Continuity dogs us. Continuity rules us and pulls us back. We seem to have a little hope that by the method of extremes we could get away from things that merge indistinguishably into other things. We find that every departure from one merger is entrance upon another. At the Cape of Good Hope, vast volumes of smoke from great manufacturing centers, as an explanation, cannot very acceptably merge with the explanation of extramundane origin, but smoke from a terrestrial volcano can, and that is the suggestion that is made in Law Nature. There is, in human intellection, no real standard to judge by, but our acceptance, for the present, is that the more nearly positive will prevail. By the more nearly positive we mean the more nearly organized. Everything merges away into everything else, but proportionately to its complexity, if unified, a thing seems strong, real, and distinct. So, in aesthetics, it is recognized that diversity in unity is higher beauty, or approximation to beauty, than is simpler unity, so the logicians feel that agreement of diverse data constitute greater convincingness, or strength, than that of mere parallel instances, so to Herbert Spencer the more highly differentiated and integrated is the more fully evolved. Our opponents hold out for mundane origin of all black rains. Our method will be the presenting of diverse phenomena in agreement with the notion of some other origin. We take up not only black rains but black rains and their accompanying phenomena. A correspondent to Knowledge, 5-190, writes of a black rain that fell in the Clyde Valley, March 1, 1884, of another black rain that fell 2 days later. According to the correspondent, a black rain had fallen in the Clyde Valley, March 20, 1828, then again March 22, 1828. According to Nature, 9-43, a black rain fell at Marles Ford, England, September 4, 1873, more than 24 hours later another black rain fell in the same small town. The Black Rains of Slains. According to Rev. James Rust, Scottish Showers. A black rain at Slains, January 14, 1862 another at Carluke, 140 miles from Slains, May 1, 1862 at Slains, May 20, 1862 Slains, October 28, 1863. But after two of these showers, vast quantities of a substance described sometimes as pumice stone, but sometimes as slag, were washed upon the sea coast near Slains. A chemist's opinion is given that the substance was slag, that it was not a volcanic product, slag from smelting works. We now have, for black rains, a concomitant that is irreconcilable with origin from factory chimneys. Whatever it may have been, the quantity of the substance was so enormous that, in Mr. Rust's opinion, to have produced so much of it would have required the united output of all the smelting works in the world. If slag it were, we accept that an artificial product has, in enormous quantities, fallen from the sky. If you don't think that such occurrences are damned by science, read Scottish Showers and see how impossible it was for the author to have this matter taken up by the scientific world. The first and second rains corresponded, in time, with ordinary ebullitions of Vesuvius. The third and fourth, according to Mr. Rust, corresponded with no known volcanic activities upon this earth. La Science Pour 2, 11-26. That, between October, 1863, and January, 1866, four more black rains fell at Slanes, Scotland. The writer of this supplementary account tells us, with a better, or more unscrupulous, orthodoxy than Mr. Rust's, that of the eight black rains, five coincided with eruptions of Vesuvius and three with eruptions of Etna. The fate of all explanation is to close one door only to have another fly wide open. I should say that my own notions upon this subject will be considered irrational, but at least my gregariousness is satisfied in associating here with the preposterous or this writer, and those who think in his rut, have to say that they can think of four discharges from one far distant volcano, passing over a great part of Europe, precipitating nowhere else, discharging precisely over one small northern parish. But also of three other discharges, from another far distant volcano, showing the same precise preference, if not marksmanship, for one small parish in Scotland. Nor would orthodoxy be any better off in thinking of exploding meteorites and their debris, preciseness and recurrence would be just as difficult to explain. My own notion is of an island near an oceanic trade route, it might receive debris from passing vessels 7 times in 4 years. Other concomitants of black rains. In Tim's Year Book, 1851-270, there is an account of a sort of rumbling, as of wagons, heard for upward of an hour without ceasing, July 16, 1850, Bulwick Rectory, Northampton, England. On the 19th, a black rain fell. In Nature, 30-6, a correspondent writes of an intense darkness at Preston, England, April 26, 1884, page 32, another correspondent writes of black rain at Crowell, near Worcester. April 26, that a week later, or May 3, it had fallen again, another account of black rain, upon the 28th of April, near Church Chetton, so intense that the following day brooks were still dyed with it. According to four accounts by correspondents to Nature, there were earthquakes in England at this time. Or the black rain of Canada, November 9, 1819. This time it is orthodoxy to attribute the black precipitate to smoke of forest fires south of the Ohio River. Zurcher, Meteors, p. 238. That this black rain was accompanied by shocks like those of an earthquake. Edinburgh Philosophical Journal, 2-381. That the earthquake had occurred at the climax of intense darkness and the fall of black rain. Red rains. Orthodoxy. Sand blown by the Sirocco, from the Sahara to Europe. Especially in the earthquake regions of Europe, there have been many falls of red substance, usually, but not always, precipitated in rain. Upon many occasions, these substances have been absolutely identified as sand from the Sahara. When I first took this matter up, I came across assurance after assurance, so positive to this effect, that, had I not been an intermediatist, I'd have looked no further. Samples collected from a rain at Genoa, samples of sand forwarded from the Sahara, absolute agreement, some writers said, same color, same particles of quartz, even the same shells of diatoms mixed in. Then the chemical analyses, not a disagreement worth mentioning. Our intermediatist means of expression will be that, with proper exclusions, after the scientific or theological method, anything can be identified with anything else, if all things are only different expressions of an underlying oneness. To many minds there's rest and there's satisfaction in that expression absolutely identified. Absoluteness, or the illusion of it, the universal quest. If chemists have identified substances that have fallen in Europe as sand from African deserts, swept up in African whirlwinds, that's assuasive to all the irritations that occur to those cloistered minds that must repose in the concept of a snug, isolated, little world, free from contact with cosmic wickednesses, save from stellar guile, undisturbed by interplanetary prowlings and invasions. The only trouble is that a chemist's analysis, which seems so final and authoritative to some minds, is no more nearly absolute than is identification by a child or description by an imbecile. I take some of that back, I accept that the approximation is higher. But that it's based upon delusion, because there is no definiteness, no homogeneity, no stability, only different stages somewhere between them and indefiniteness, heterogeneity, and instability. There are no chemical elements. It seems acceptable that Ramsey and others have settled that. The chemical elements are only another disappointment in the quest for the positive, as the definite, the homogeneous, and the stable. If there were real elements, there could be a real science of chemistry. Upon November 12 and 13, 1902, occurred the greatest fall of matter in the history of Australia. Upon the 14th of November, it rained mud, in Tasmania. It was of course attributed to Australian whirlwinds, but, according to the Monthly Weather Review, 32365, there was a haze all the way to the Philippines, also as far as Hong Kong. It may be that this phenomenon had no especial relation with the even more tremendous fall of matter that occurred in Europe, February, 1903. For several days, the south of England was a dumping ground from somewhere. If you'd like to have a chemist's opinion, even though it's only a chemist's opinion, see the report of the meeting of the Royal Chemical Society, April 2, 1903. Mr. E. G. Clayton read a paper upon some of the substance that had fallen from the sky, collected by him. The Sahara explanation applies mostly to falls that occur in southern Europe. Farther away, the conventionalists are a little uneasy. For instance, the editor of the Monthly Weather Review, 29-121, says of a red rain that fell near the coast of Newfoundland, early in 1890, it would be very remarkable if this was Sahara dust. Mr. Clayton said that the matter examined by him was merely windborne dust from the roads and lanes of Wessex. This opinion is typical of all scientific opinion or theological opinion or feminine opinion, all very well except for what it disregards. The most charitable thing I can think of, because I think it gives us a broader tone to relieve our malices with occasional charities, is that Mr. Clayton had not heard of the astonishing extent of this fall had covered the Canary Islands, on the 19th, for instance. I think, myself, that in 1903, we passed through the remains of a powdered world left over from an ancient interplanetary dispute, brooding in space like a red resentment ever since. Or, like every other opinion, the notion of dust from Wessex turns into a provincial thing when we look it over.